This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Mark Brown. Mark is Director of Field Services with Plains Cotton Growers. We're going to focus on the U.S. cotton crop for just a moment. That's coming up. First off, Undersecretary Marketing and Regulatory Programs at USDA, Jenny Moffitt.
Local and regional food systems are really just about kind of the local food economy. So farmers and ranchers who are producing food and selling into their local and regional food systems, whether that is direct to farmers markets and through farmers markets or through community supported agriculture, those CSA food boxes that people will buy, or directly to institutions like farm to hospital, farm to school, farm to food bank, and then also selling to restaurants and grocery stores in the region. So it's really about shortening that supply chain and a shortened supply chain between farm all the way to consumer.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Mark Brown. Mark is Director of Field Services, Plains Cotton Growers, and covers a wide swath of the largest cotton growing region in the United States. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you again here today.
What kind of a swath are we talking about?
Yes, sir. Well, Plains Cotton Growers covers a 42-county service area, and so we go from the western side, which is the Texas-New Mexico line, all the way up to the top of Texas, to the Oklahoma border with the Oklahoma Panhandle, and then back around to the edge of the Caprock, and we follow the Caprock down to all the way as far south as Big Spring, which, and you know, you and I are visiting by telephone currently, and I happen to be down on the southern end today, down at Big Spring, America, and then we go all the way back toward Midland, so look at that total area that encompasses 42 counties of the Texas High Plains.
Maybe we can talk harvest at this point. What you're seeing, what you're hearing, what's happening?
You bet. Well, what I'd like to first say is, of course, you can't really talk about the harvest without also talking about the weather situation. And so since you and I last visited, we have had our official freeze across the whole High Plains area. And for Lubbock, that occurred on October the 29th with the first freeze. And Lubbock had four consecutive nights in a row of sub-freezing temperatures, with the lowest being on Halloween. On October 31st, we registered a low of 26 degrees. And so those four nights pretty much took everything out. And again, I'm down here at Big Spring today. And so unfortunately, because of the drought situation, there just is not a lot of cotton down here in this area to harvest. And so they are headlong into the harvest operations down here, and the cotton that is remaining to be harvested, my understanding, a lot of this is going to be wrapped up pretty quickly. And so we won't see a real long harvest down on the southern end. Most of my ginners are telling me, and I'm referring back to the whole area now, most of my gin managers are telling me that they should be finished up sometime around the Christmas to New Year's time frame, which is not really all that uncommon. And in the shorter areas, I think we may have harvest and ginning wrapped up even by Thanksgiving or a week or two after. So as far as that goes, the harvest is going to be quick this year if the weather allows. Now, we're currently experiencing some good open and warm weather, and it's allowing for a lot of field work to be ongoing. But we know that toward the end of this week, we've got another chance of a passing cold front bringing in some rain showers. So we'll just have to wait and see if that actually materializes and if we actually do have more rainfall that would keep us out of the fields and slow things down once again. So we'll just have to see how things go. In terms of harvest ginning and sampling, we can look at the two classing offices for La Mesa and Lubbock that do the grading on all of the samples of the bales that are produced up here on the High Plains of Texas. And as of November the 3rd, between Lubbock and La Mesa, there had been 144,900 bales that had been processed and sampled and graded. And the thing that I would continue to say is that after a year with such extreme weather conditions, when we had such oppressive heat, we had a lot of long-term drought issues, we had a lot of hail damage in the area. In spite of all of that, we're pretty pleased with the type of quality that we're seeing that was produced from the 2023 crop out here on the High Plains. And I think most Jenners would agree with me that they are overall very pleased with the grades that they're getting back. We're hearing of marketing loan or loan value grades of coming back in the range of around 54 cents. Now, certainly we've seen some low grades where it might have been burned up dryland cotton or whatever the situation might have been to cause those low grades. But by and large, most of it is in the 53, 54 cent range. And we have seen some topping out the chart up in that 57 to near 58 cent range. And so some very good grades out there. I'm very pleased that even though we did see some high Micronair and just a very small percentage of low Micronair samples, the vast majority of our Micronair is in that premium range this year. And we'd always like to have as long a staple as possible, but even after a hot, dry year like this, Lubbock is averaging nearly 36 staple, and La Mesa is averaging close to that as well, around 35 and a half. So we're very pleased with the grades and the quality of the crop that we had this year. Wish we had more bales of it. Unfortunately, the volume of the cotton that we're going to produce here on the High Plains is going to be less than average, and we'd like to see that. We'd like to see much more of it because this is going to be the second low performing year in a row, and so that makes it tough not only on producers but also on the entire infrastructure. But we're hoping that we'll get good winter rainfall and we'll have a good optimum year next year, and we'll get things back on track.
Are you hearing anything at this point as far as demand, price, what's happening on the seed side?
Yes. Well, sure. And I can tell you that we were very concerned also because of all of the small bowls that are out there. And some of the very first reports that I heard about coming in from the gin was a seed weight of less than 600 pounds on some of those bales per bale that were coming out from the gins. But since that time, I've been hearing much more favorable numbers in terms of seed weight per bale, and I'm glad of that. As I travel around, of course, there's always going to be a range of prices that are being offered by the gins to the farmer, but I'm seeing most of the offerings to farmers from the gin going somewhere in the range of around $250 to $270 per ton. And so that's very good. That's not anywhere near where we were at last year whenever we had such high seed prices that it helped make up for some of the losses in the production. But at the same time, whenever we look long-term at seed values, that's not a bad price.
Part of the reason I threw that in with about 2.5 minutes left here is because we have seed cotton in the farm bill, which is now expired, right?
Yes, that is right. And so the bill that we're currently operating under officially expired at the end of September. And so there's a lot of work going on about getting the next farm bill done. We've had a lot of holdups. We had to change speakers in the House of Representatives, and that took approximately 3 weeks. And then in addition to that, Congress is working on a looming deadline of November 17th, whenever they're going to run out of funding for the government again, and they're going to have to pass some type of funding resolution in order to prevent another government shutdown. And so that has somewhat curtailed all of the discussions and all the work that's gone on with the farm bill, given us somewhat of a delay. The House, we've got our House Ag Committee Chairman, G.T. Thompson, and he is working closely with our new Speaker, Mike Johnson, and they are still hoping to get something passed through the House by the end of December. But actually, we know that it's really going to require an extension of the current farm bill, because even though we could possibly get it passed in the House, then we have to reconcile that with the Senate version and have a final passage of the farm bill. So it will be going into certainly 2024. And so currently what we're looking at is an extension, likely a one-year extension from what I'm hearing.
Couldn't let you go without mentioning a couple of Centennial Farms as well. What's that?
Yes, sir. A couple of farmers that work on the Plains Cotton Growers Committees, and they're our very much appreciated board members. And I want to mention Scott Harmon, his family farm. Scott and Amanda and Guy, their farm was recognized in 2020 for being a Centennial Farm. And just a couple of weekends ago, they had a historical marker placed in front of their headquarters out on FM 400, just south of Idaloo on the west side of the road. And J.R. Harmon, his great-great-grandfather, actually came from Paris because the boll weevil put him out of production in Paris, Texas, and brought him over to the West Texas area around Idaloo. He bought land for $62.50 an acre. And that was in 1920. And so we want to congratulate Harmon Farms. And then likewise, down at O'Donnell, we've got Travis Myers that is currently the vice president of Plains Cotton Growers, and his family farm was just recognized in October as a Centennial Farm. His grandfather, Delbert, came out in 1923 and began a farm, paid $40 an acre in the O'Donnell area, and started a farm, then turned that down to his, or passed it down to his son, Harold, and Harold's wife, Frances. And today, the farm is being operated by their son, Travis, and his two sons, Landon and Toby. So I think it's just great how these operations have gone on for an entire centennial now and continue to be successful and continue to weather all the hard times out here. And so we certainly want to congratulate the Myers and the Harmon families.
Mark Brown is Director of Field Services with Plains Cotton Growers. They're online, plainscotton.org. And this is the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Mark Brown with Plains Cotton Growers.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Join us at the Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show, November 28th through 30th at the Amarillo Civic Center. Connect with hundreds of exhibitors showcasing the latest ag technology and attend agriculture-focused seminars, too. Earn your certification at the Beef Quality Assurance Training or attend livestock education sessions with the Texas Tech School of Veterinary Medicine. Hear from experts at the Cotton Conference, earn CEU credits, or attend the Texas Wheat Symposium. It's all happening at the Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show. Visit AmarilloFarmShow.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest Mark Brown, Plains Cotton Growers, online, plainscotton.org.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is the Agribusiness Report.
We are at the end of our week-long trade mission to Southeast Asia.
Undersecretary of Agriculture for Trade Alexis Taylor leading the mission focusing on Malaysia and Singapore, but the almost 30 representatives of U.S. food and ag businesses have been meeting with potential buyers from other nations in the region. In fact,
we've had over 300 business-to-business meetings, but I think more impactful is the quality of those meetings, the interest of the buyers that I heard from our businesses.
Taylor says there are good reasons why USDA picked Southeast Asia for a trade mission. First,
the just population dynamics that we're seeing, they have a growing middle class. There is strong connection to the United States, a preference for U.S. food and agricultural products, which makes this a very attractive market.
It's an exciting $15 billion market for U.S. food and farm products now.
It's going to be an even more exciting market for U.S. food and agriculture in 5 years.
Gary Crawford, Washington.